Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And Rob Rose, something has happened to Steinhoff over the past couple of days, and today we hear, well, last night we hear that Marcus Juster has resigned, has been suspended, or has he resigned as CEO of Steinhoff?
Resigned.
He's resigned with immediate effect. Christo Wiese is taking over as sort of acting CEO. The share price has tanked. How much has Christo Wiese, just before we get into a substantive discussion here, how much has Christo Wiese lost in market cap personally in the last 5 days?
It's interesting. In the last 5 days, he's lost a lot of money. I think Bloomberg came out with a piece saying that that Christo Wiese, who was notionally the richest South African in the country last year, has personally lost about 40 billion rand in his investments this year, which includes a monumental mess up at Brait because they bought New Look and then wrote that down to zero. And then this 71% loss in Steinhoff's market value. I think it's 165 billion wiped off Steinhoff's market value in the last 3 days, which is a staggering amount of money.
And why has Wiese resigned? Marcus Juster, why did he go? What's the problem?
Well, there've been a tax investigation into Steinhoff in Germany, the German authorities,
right,
running for about 2 years or so. The board, apparently, Steinhoff's board discovered what they said was new information yesterday, which led to Marcus Juster handing in his resignation immediately, as well as others leaving too. So it seems like there was certain information that was hidden from them that is relevant and might indicate, certainly would look to indicate, criminal culpability on behalf of Marcus Juster, who now is gone.
Is he gone from Europe or is he back in South Africa? Do we know where he is? How Marcus Juster, this story, the Steinhoff story, was it not, Ron? It was one of the great big South African successes, right?
It was
expansion abroad.
Yep.
They bought God knows how many companies overseas. Mm. Big swinging dicks, as they call them, in the markets. How could something like this happen?
I mean, this is where, this is his company, right? He starts about 20 odd years ago, and he is the Christo Wiese's protege as much as Wouter Passon was. This was the story. But as soon as they went into Germany, and there was question marks about accountancy, which they kind of brushed off in a very much coarse Becker Christo Wiese kind of way, this is nonsense. And yesterday, it finally came. And the thing is, today was results day, and they've been postponed. I don't think any top 40 big company has ever had to postpone their results. So it tells you how the rot has set in. And maybe all these businesses they've bought in Germany and something else in the US, a mattress firm.
Big acquisition in
France.
In
France as well. Mm. But analysts always say about Steinhoff, no one quite understands how this thing makes money. It's been acquiring stuff and growing, becoming this supposed Walmart of the emerging world. But no one quite can see how it all operates altogether. And I think that's come to catch up with them with their different accountancy practices in the US versus Europe and then SA. So it's now come to fore, and now there is this whole issue around criminality around potentially.
Does the company have a center? Does it have something at its heart?
It does build furniture. I mean, create furniture, and it has got Conforama and some
good
assets.
It's a furniture company.
Yes, it bought JD Group, Joshua Dorr, your uncle in the furniture business. So it does have assets, and they unbundled Star, which is the African retail business.
Right.
Christo Wiese's big plan was to use Steinhoff as the center of his retail assets and merge it with ShopRite.
Yeah, that's right.
Wouter Passon did not like this idea. Yeah. Apparently, the rumors were that he just didn't get on with Marcus.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing.
So this is the Stellenbosch mafia falling apart in a way.
But actually, when Steinhoff moved its listing from its primary listing from Johannesburg to Frankfurt a few years ago. And its domicile, really.
Yeah.
Since that time, there have been sort of mutterings about, did they do it for tax reasons?
Mm.
Were they in doing kind of financial engineering there? And this is sort of finally beginning to vindicate all those questions. And one of the really striking things, Peter, is that, our market is so much a rand hedge market. Our top 10 stocks are all these big stocks with big foreign exposure, and when the rand goes down, everybody piles into the market. And in the last couple of weeks, we've had first Naspers,
which
is 19% of the index, and now we've got Steinhoff kind of falling apart. And all of a sudden, this kind of wonderful market where you can kind of hedge your exposure and go offshore by staying at home, it's all kind of coming to pieces.
So the solution is just buy Bitcoin.
We'll also come to Bitcoin in a minute.
Can't let you down.
What Is this the end of Steinhoff? I mean, could this, you know, look, the Germans are pretty thorough when they, you know, in their investigations, as we can appreciate. Presumably, in other jurisdictions, then this will trigger other tax investigations, right? In the States, in the UK, wherever they happen to be, in France, the French might be, you know, less thorough. Who knows? I don't mean to be insulting, but you know, when you're talking about German, a German tax investigation is a serious piece of work. I mean, could it kill the company?
I mean, I think in that case, there's a lot of assets of the company that are self-standing. JD Group, for example, could always be unbundled or spun off. The question is, how deep does the accounting rot go at Steinhoff? Is it right the way through? Is it pervasive? Is it not just Markus Huerster and a few small things? Is it for numerous years and throughout the whole business? In which case, you might say the Steinhoff brand might not survive, but the individual assets, such as Conforama, which still operates, still makes money, could be spun off or separately. A plan could be made for it, but I suppose it does depend on how wide set the rot is within Steinhoff and how pervasive the irregularities are.
And the board has not said what it found.
Not yet.
No.
And Wiese has not said anything since becoming acting CEO. No.
Not since this morning.
Parachuted in this
morning. Are they a talkative company?
They're not at all. I think the transparency has been shocking, and that's part of the reason analysts have not liked it, besides the fact that nobody understands it and it's issued just tons of shares. They don't like journalists, they don't like the media, and they don't like questions over their practices.
However, Christo does like journalists and likes the media. So hopefully, going forward, the next couple of weeks we'll get a bit of illumination.
But if you can afford it.
I mean, for him and his empire, I think for him personally, this is his whole... He's built towards this whole movement where White Person retires, he moves across, and then Huerster becomes the heir apparent and he's released its back. So now here he is running the company again.
But there are questions about Christo. Mm. I mean, would the board not have been in a position to have uncovered this earlier? And Christo has, in your publication, spent a while defending Markus Huerster, and now he's having to retract that. I mean, so to what extent should the board have known about this or not? And I think those are the questions that Christo certainly will have to answer.
Yeah. Well, talking about rand hedges, Naspers comes to mind, Hillary. It's the rand hedge to beat all hedges. It's worth how many thousands of rands per share now?
It's 1.56 trillion rand.
Which is still less than 10 cents.
Naspers is in trouble, and Chris Beck is in trouble because of their links now with the Guptas and sort of rather shady deals with the SABC, which they all claim happened before they knew how bad the Guptas were.
It's actually not just the Guptas. It's the whole capture above and beyond the Guptas and the allegations that they put heavy pressure on, for example, the chair of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, on the then communications minister. Over set-top boxes and encryption and the two different models. So the ANN 7 link and multi-choice giving them favourite treatment is one part of it. But the other part of it is the relationship with the SABC. And the third part, which is much more explicit, is the pressure they seem to have brought to bear. And Peter, the interesting thing is when the romance dies, you know, the market really turns, and now you know they're looking for every bad thing about Naspers there ever was. And Chris Becker, to his credit, belatedly realized that he's got a problem, but their initial communications were incredibly dismissive,
weren't they? Just, I mean, they were very sort of smarmy and a little bit snide. There's an incredibly rude interview in this week's Financial Mail with Karim, in which he says of course Becker says Karim is astonishingly arrogant. He's done very well in the ICT sector, and no doubt he's very creative and enterprising, but I saw very little of that in my exchanges. He was dogmatic, rigid, pushy. He seemed annoyed with me for not seeing how brilliant he is. Brilliant he may be, but that doesn't give him the right to his culture of entitlement. What is he talking about, Rob?
He's talking about the fact that Kurs has refuted anything that Yunus Karim has said, has denied the fact that he put pressure on Karim when he was the telecoms minister to sway telecoms regulation in a way that suited Naspers, that suited multi-choice.
Yeah.
They've had an increasingly bitter exchange over the last couple of days in which Kurs Becker said, "Oh, I never discussed this stuff. We just talked about various other things." And Karim said, "No, this isn't true." And it's getting increasingly wild.
And who do we trust here? Who's the more? I mean, this is probably an unfair question. But you know, we've had Nkabisi Jonas making an allegation about something that was said to him by the Guptas. Here's something that Eunice Karim is saying about Koos Bekker. You can't walk away from what cabinet minister is saying. I mean, there was no reason to distrust Karim. Is there? Does he have a dark background that we don't know about? Or no. He's not a captured minister. He was fired, in fact.
If a US court is going to look at this one, it's going to get really interesting.
Well, this is the interesting thing. So now
there's the potential for it to go to a
US law firm, which might be one of these ambulance chasing things which see an opportunity called Pomerantz, is now saying it's investigating claims on behalf of NASPERS shareholders, because NASPERS is listed in New York, isn't it?
It has American depository receipts.
Which is subject to a fairly high degree of regulation, I would have thought, and that would involve the not the Financial Services Board, what's it called?
SEC.
Yeah. Once again, if they start, would they investigate something like this?
I mean, NASPERS, if you look at NASPERS as a company, it's not very well liked. I mean, we talk about Koos Bekker, remember at the AGM, when they put questions to him, analysts put questions about splitting Tencent and NASPERS. It was very dismissive. And everyone said after that AGM, you almost sense his sense of pride and the arrogance of him. And it's not a really liked stock within the management, the control structure, it's very murky. So I think that, I mean, there are some US shareholders that are very unhappy with how it's run as a company.
The position seems to be, look, we, you know, this deal was done in 2012 or whenever it was. We didn't know much about the Guptas as we know now, you know, it was all about board when we did it. But Hillary, an SEC investigation or any kind of investigation into what are payments for favors, in a way, from NASPERS to the Guptas, unexplained, could be real trouble.
Well, hoped for favours. In fact, he didn't. Yeah. He didn't achieve his objective. Yes, well, but that's going to.
He won the war.
Well, yeah. Temporarily, yeah. But I think it's coming at him now from all angles. It's this one. It's the Gupta thing. It's the ANN7 thing. It's the
unhappiness over Tencent.
It's the unhappiness over Tencent, which is the huge.
Who's unhappy about Tencent?
Everybody's unhappy. Well, there's several angles of the Tencent thing. First of all, there's long been pressure on them to unbundle this Tencent stake, this huge Chinese tech company, which is worth. NASPERS is sort of trading at a discount.
Yeah, sure.
The rest of its assets are trading at a discount to Tencent holding, which is really what's been driving the company. But in the last several weeks, there are all these questions about the legality of its actual ownership of Tencent, as well as the pressure for the group to unbundle Tencent and whether it could.
And
the question marks about what else is it doing?
Yep.
If you know, the rest of its assets are worth less than it's holding in this big Chinese company.
Its other assets are in a loss, right? The other assets, right?
They're negative.
So if you remove Tencent, they're not doing well as a company. But Tencent just covers it all. And
so
all
the bonuses now are going to romance is worn off.
It's totally worn off.
Everybody's they against them now on everything.
But the evidence so far against Chris is that they paid 100 million rand to the SABC. And they paid 25 million to ANN7. And then the inferences, and there's no actual direct evidence of this besides Eunice Karim, what Eunice Karim is saying, the inference was that, you know, in exchange for these above the bar payments compared to what they pay the other channels, they would then assist NASPERS through the back door in terms of regulation.
You understand?
So the evidence is tenuous.
Cloud Mutsoneng here. This is not multiple choice dealing with the but fundamentally, it's Claudio Mutsoneng they're dealing with. This is what Malchus is.
And the minutes of that meeting that have been published are quite astonishing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The sort of things that people say. I wonder how much they pay Business Day Television for being on.
Nothing.
I think they should owe us a fortune. we'll be back to discuss the exact amount they owe us after this break. Welcome back, and strike that conversation from the record. the ANC Congress, the economy, but before we get to either of those, apparently the hawks appeared in Parliament today to speak to the head of the inquiry into Eskom. Have you been following this?
No.
Well, I'm sorry, then we won't discuss it, but according to my Twitter feed, the chairwoman of the Hawks Investor of the inquiry into Eskom announced to the inquiry that the Hawks were there and they wanted to speak to her and wanted to question her about her committee hearing, which I thought was extraordinary.
It seems like an act of intimidation.
It
like
is
a lot
intimidation.
Of it.
Yeah.
It's like the state capture inquiry. There's
maybe
there's
they want to contribute.
Exactly. Well, that seems very likely.
We've got
right?
new evidence.
there was earlier evidence of efforts to intimidate the chairwoman
yeah.
of the inquiry. I think there were some sort of blackmail threats or death threats or something. And of course, the evidence leader also
yeah.
was.
That's
was
right. Yeah, well, he's, they've attempted,
well,
to,
going
somebody
into
attempted to bribe him. Yeah.
Going to NASDAQ, all this news coming up, but Eskom can't be good for the incumbent and who he chooses. So this is definitely intimidation. Just like trying to squash this thing down.
Yeah. Talking of which, then let's get to the ANC conference. It's so close now. It's breathtaking. And there's no point trying to call us as they're on. I mean, nobody knows.
No, nobody knows. It's all about what happens on in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
I remember meeting someone in 2007 who was sent there as a Thabo Mbeki, to vote for Thabo Mbeki, and he got there, and the wind. Like, he smelled the Zuma movement. He voted Zuma. So it's all about what happens on that particular day and what the sentiment is.
What I don't understand, can anyone help me? So there have been all these provincial conferences, right? Mpumalanga, KwaZulu this week, Limpopo. What are they? Do they? Who votes?
Well, the branches. I mean, the branches.
Then but they send delegates. They send 5,000 odd people, and they.
Right, but then why have a provincial congress? I mean, does the province vote?
No. It doesn't. Like this, it just says no. Doesn't the province doesn't vote? They send their delegates.
But what's the point of having a provincial general council then? Yeah. I mean, there are people. If you're in the Nkosazana camp, what you're going to say is, it's the provinces that matter, because she's got. She's won more provinces, basically, even though she might have won them closely. What they argue is that whether you win by one vote or 20 votes in the provincial PGC, you win it.
Yes.
And then all those people have to vote for her if they've, you know, if it's KwaZulu.
But
that doesn't sound right to me.
No,
according to what
barometer.
I read, the individual has the right to vote the way they want.
So right now it's 5-4, right, to Ramaphosa. You've got 5 provinces, she's got 4.
She's got bigger ones.
But she got the bigger ones, so they send more delegates to.
But they're not under any obligation, although they may.
Yeah.
They're not under any obligation to vote one.
No, when it gets there, literally, it's all about what happens on that week going into it, when people can be swayed and so on. And so I'm not into predicting what happens.
The Ramaphosa camp is very confident. They believe that they have virtually got it sewn up. They seem to have done a really good job in terms of organizing themselves. And the slate they chose was quite a wise one in retrospect, Naledi Pandor. I mean, it's basically saying that
we're
not
going to.
She's not
going to be deputy president.
I don't think so.
No, exactly.
Not.
She's not.
Sort of
leaves a slot
like
for somebody else.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like a placemaker, a placeholder.
As a barometer.
placeholder.
To use NASPAS terminology.
Yeah.
But as a barometer of where sentiment is, I think these provincial councils have been useful. Certainly anything can change on the day, but I do think it does indicate that there is a strong groundswell of support for Ramaphosa and against Jacob Zuma, not even so much for Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, but more against Zuma.
Does anyone want to call it quickly, Ron? Quickly.
He's done well in KZN. It was very well what he's done. Call it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Go on.
Ramaphosa.
Ramaphosa, definitely.
Hillary?
I'm a pessimist. I couldn't possibly call Ramaphosa. I'm too much of a pessimist.
Yeah.
As much as I would like it to go that way.
So Dlamini Zuma, and I'm afraid I also think Nkosazana is going to win it. I can't see this party doing the sensible thing.
And there's the bribery factor. Don't forget, there's the paid votes factor, which one should not ignore.
But you know, this is the one party. You know, when ANC votes in Parliament and they said, don't vote with your conscience. As much as now they're trying to set up, like, what you're going to vote for when you go to NASDAQ, I think you vote on your conscience there. Literally, you do. So if the wins, so it's all about the wins on the day.
Hopefully if you vote for Nkosazana, why would you? What promise does she hold out to your children?
You are a beneficiary of the past 10 years of what's been happening, the graft. You are a beneficiary of it, so it's continue that gravy train. That's the only reason why you want to keep it.
So it's that short-sighted. I mean,
yeah, it's that short-sighted.
Nobody sees the cliff. Nobody sees the edge.
No one's looking at 2019. I think David Mabuza, maybe in his dodginess, is looking at 2019. The fact that, fine, if I back Nkosazana Zuma, we might lose 2019, then what am I backing?
Yeah.
But it's all about your back pocket, in truth. I think if you vote
Isn't that just absolutely revolting?
On economic policy, Dlamini Zuma is nowhere. She's proposed nothing substantial.
No, she proposed what her ex-husband proposes.
Which is basically more of the same. And
yeah. And presumably the people around her would be the people around him.
Yep. Top six tells you.
I didn't read it on the front page of Business Day, but I noticed that today, and this is good for Zuma going into the conference, that we've had a quarter... in the third quarter of surprisingly strong GDP growth. Indeed. It's at the bottom of page four, if you haven't found it in Business Day today, driven by agriculture, Hillary.
Yeah, agriculture and mining. Agriculture is still in
major demand. Isn't that brilliant, though, in a way? Because agriculture and mining are what we are.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, they're not really what we are. In fact, they're tiny proportions of the economy. If together they're 10% of the economy, that's actually a lot. But it's sort of... It shows you that small sectors can have a very big impact, very negative or very positive, on the fortunes of the economy, at least temporarily. And as someone put it today, if agriculture and mining are driving the economy, why do we have such horrific policy environments for both of them? We've got the new mining charter in mining, which has killed investment, and in agriculture we've got all this land reform stuff, which is also killing investment because there's such uncertainty about land ownership.
Yeah.
And those two sectors are subject to huge uncertainty. But for all of that, there's major turnaround stuff. Agriculture jumped by 44%.
I don't understand.
Well, if you're very, very negative, and it's a deep drought, and then the rains start pouring, and you get a bumper crop, you get like a huge swing off a very low base. The downside,
so
I suppose,
it's a kind of a natural productivity.
It's just turnaround. Yeah. If you just go back to normal, you get a huge bounce.
Yeah.
And that's what agriculture has been seeing, not just going back to normal, but doing better than normal. The trouble is, of course, that even if it carries on with bumper crops into next year, you're not going to get that bounce again. So agriculture as a sort of a driver of growth is, it's going to be probably neutral if it even sustains where it is now. You know, the effect is going to be zero, if you like. Mining is benefiting from the commodities boom, presumably. Mm. Whether that lasts or not, we don't know. And even manufacturing's not too bad.
Is there a commodities boom? I mean, every time I hear it on the radio, the price of gold is always the same. It's $1,200.
Stable is good. Stable is good, and as long as the rand is weakening as it is, the guys are in a good space right now. So that's what's happening in commodities.
Take out those three sectors, which tend to be very, very volatile one way or another, you get basically zero growth.
But there was one point I think that was really good about the GDP numbers, and that to me was that the state sector, essentially government employees, has shrank. It's minimal, but at least it shows the right direction, because the real problem for Ramaphosa or Dlamini Zuma is the expanding state. So the fact that they've been able to constrain that to some extent seems a positive move for the economy next year, because because we can't keep expanding the state sector like we have. So to me, that was a positive thing for next year for whoever.
The state has been constrained for a long time. Our problem has always been, and government, they said, okay, fine, treasury, like reining department budgets and so on. It's just been but on the SOE front, have fun. Like that's where the trouble has been. But I think on the states, they've done pretty well in terms of austerity, focusing and not hiring more employees after the large years of the first term of Zuma anyway. But it's so easy where the gushing as well.
But you still have state employees demanding 10%, 20% increases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that they've managed to constrain the growth indicates that they're getting a handle on the total number, which is important.
Which is
great.
Hillary, how well is Melusi Gigaba doing? How well or badly? I know you saw him the other day.
We did.
And what was the conversation about?
He certainly has started to get his head around the issues. Mm. I think he had a horrendous time when he went on this international investor roadshow.
The most recent one, post the
medium-term budget.
Right.
And
why do you think that?
Oh no! Well, that's our information from all sides. Yeah. No, they gave him a very hard time, as they would have for this really disastrous budget, where he just announces, it's kind of where he went out and he said, "Oh, this is terrible," and did nothing about it.
But he doesn't have a 14-point plan.
He didn't even push that one. He has a 14-point plan. Most of whose points haven't happened yet, but yes, and many of whose points he can do nothing about, like trying to get the mining sector to sit down and talk to the minister, which is a bit of a lost cause for good reason.
Yeah.
Look, I think he's getting his head around the issues. It's kind of almost like they're flailing around looking for solutions in an environment which is incredibly hostile to them. Yeah. And they're coming up with various ideas to solve the problem, none of which are really new. But at least I suppose there is some effort being made to close the fiscal gap. But with the presidency interfering and what the process is, has now got very complicated. And I still get the feeling that the minister is not really taking the advice of his department, or not really taking his own department seriously.
How careful? And he's obviously very careful about his own career. I mean, he needs to. So if you're a politician, and particularly a finance minister, you want to keep your job, you want to do right by the country. And sometimes, Ron, particularly in this environment, the two simply don't mix. I mean, Zuma would pull one way,
yeah,
and reason would pull another way.
Yeah, I think what...
Can he survive this? Would he survive, can I ask you, would he survive a Ramaphosa victory in 2 weeks' time?
I don't think he'd survive a Ramaphosa victory or an NDZ victory.
Oh, really?
I think both would remove him. I think his mistake was when he got Treasury, not understanding, you can't go in Treasury and be like a survival mentality, especially in Treasury in this time, right? He doesn't understand his tools, and his tools are the Treasury, people within Treasury. He hasn't trusted them at all, so he hasn't had any tools to actually get a grip on what's going on within the country. So I think post-December, I think he's out on both slates, on whoever wins.
How long
credibility
after,
is
how long after December, after whoever wins, does Zuma leave office? He can't stay until the election, sure.
I think if NDZ leaves, he might give us a State of the Nation address, and after that he's gone. Like that's March, April.
Yeah.
But if I think Ramaphosa leaves, February, right?
If Ramaphosa wins.
Yeah, it's very, very early.
Who gives the January 8th statement? The
president
of the party.
Yeah.
So his deputy becomes his boss immediately. If Ramaphosa wins, he's his boss. He's on the side watching.
Right.
Yeah.
And would an NDZ cabinet look a lot different to Jacob Zuma's?
I think, you know...
Would finance go to Butterbeel at Lamidi?
No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't. I think with NDZ, the one thing, she's astute, she's a great technocrat. I think she's terrible with people, person skills. So I think she'd do the right appointments. She'd move Kikau, but she'd move Zwane, the minister, and so on. Our only issue, I guess, with her is the people backing her and how she protects them if she has to, or does she turn against them, right? That's the question. My only question was, does she have the gumption to turn against her backers? That's what she'll have to do, right?
Yeah.
And now on Ramaphosa's slate, they aren't there, so it's clear that he's going, he can go after them.
Yeah.
But in terms of Malusa, I definitely think he's no longer going to be there. All the Des van Rooyen, all Zuma's late season appointments, I don't think they see them having a future.
Good for Malusa Gigaba. We have to say goodbye to you now. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.